Greetings, and welcome to a Fireside Chat. My name is Lance White, and I'll be your host. Today, we have another fascinating guest with an amazing story. His name is Jim Sparks. I first heard Jim's story on Coast to Coast AM, and it was riveting. I immediately ordered his book, The Keepers, and found it to be one of the most fascinating accounts of a lifetime alien abduction that I've ever encountered. In the prologue by Linda Moulton Howe, she states that, through Sparks, the beings tell of our failed stewardship of this magnificent planet. Their message to us is clear. You are killing your planet. Your planet is dying. So let's welcome Jim to the show and find out what incidents led up to their warning and find out where the story began. Welcome, Jim.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Good. Well, you know, I have to tell you that your story is one of the clearest and longest accounts of, you know, alien abduction that's ever been written. When did your experiences begin, and how did they come about?
It was around mid-1988, and it was dreamlike in nature in the beginning, like a reoccurring dream, that I was being escorted out of my home. Walking through a ground-level window in the guest room. Just a dream, I thought. And then out in the woods. And I had no memory of what took place in the woods. And then escorted back through the window. But that went on for a few months. And just cutting to the chase with that. Then, but what made it remarkable, scary, and life-changing was the fact that our front lawn had... these honeysuckle bushes with thousands of tiny little flowers that would stick to your feet. And I saw an imprint of my heel on the outside of the glass, and then an imprint of my toes embedded in the carpet with the flowers in it, tracked through the house, which is no way to do that. So I immediately vacuumed all that up, and then every time I had that quote-unquote reoccurring dream, it was prevalent. So what they did was the way I was introduced to what is commonly referred to as the Grays, they did it in a slow way, methodical way, to the point where now physical evidence was there. And then latter 88 is when the experiences were 100% conscious. So, you know, anything that I share with you, it will be 95 to 98% clear conscious from the beginning to right to the end of it, each scenario.
That really makes your story unique, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, because over the years, the first 6 years were traumatic, and particularly the first 18 months, because no way, shape, or form was I interested or, you know, anything. You know, they just kind of were there and showed up. But you got to understand their nature. It's difficult. People, you know, have a lot of the same questions all the time. And I'm referring to the what are commonly known as the Grays when I speak of this. But people wonder, and they always have the same questions, and rightfully so, like, why don't you literally come out and expose yourself, or why don't you share yourself with us, or why don't you communicate with us openly and things of that nature. But if I may, I'd like to explain a little bit about the nature of these beings. And then
absolutely.
If they make sense, you know.
Absolutely. Please do.
Thanks. At the 20 years ago or 19 years ago when all this started, as far as I was concerned and anybody else in that day, which, I didn't know abductions were even going on, they were considered to be hundreds, maybe thousands of years ahead of us technically. But as in the last 20 years, I've seen so many changes that are leading to some of the things that they're doing now, or they were doing. But what separates them from us is, number one, they're not human. They're intelligent. You know, they stand upright, two arms, two legs, and so forth, but they're not human. So that's one thing. And then they've got all these natural abilities for them that are phenomenal. They're completely telepathic. So, you know, it's kind of hard to have a quote-unquote fireside chat as we're doing, right?
Oh, darn.
Yeah. It's not just telepathic in the sense of communicating thoughts, but communicating images. Their technology is 100% thought-activated. So we're so used to pushing matter around and doing things the hard way because that's the way it is.
So that's
some of the things that separate us. They can travel through dimensions. There's various ways of technically going from point A to point B. And going through dimensions means that, dimensions, to say it properly, there are things that exist in these other dimensions that we have no, you know, we only get bits and pieces of when we see things that are like ghosts or spirits.
Right,
and so forth.
Right.
So they're commonly passing through that. So they're literally in hundreds of other worlds all the time.
Wow.
Well, of course we are unique because we believe we're unique because we're here, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
They can get from one end of the universe to the other, or the galaxy, I should say, with little to no time passing.
Wow.
They have the technology to travel time. I had an experience where I actually was pulled. I call it being abducted, pulled.
Uh-huh.
And the experience was about 2 hours long.
Oh, my goodness.
And then they brought me back 2 or 3 minutes before I left.
Wow.
And you know the thing, if you go back in time and you were to shoot your grandfather, would you be here and things of that nature?
Yeah.
We wonder about time. Well, I realize that when you do come back and you're before you left, you do see your other self. But one is it's like an energy that's not compatible with your energy, so it doesn't see you. In that world, you can see things, you can see lights going on and off, you can hear noises and things of that nature.
Huh.
But you're there, but they'll literally walk through you.
Wow.
So I'm learning that you can go back in time and not mess things up.
Oh, my.
And I've learned also through these experiences that in order to change anything, like say you want to go back in time and change a future event to your advantage or maybe to a disadvantage to someone else.
Right.
Because, well, you know how the human mind works.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately. It takes a tremendous, it's the opposite of the butterfly effect. It takes a tremendous amount of energy just to change an ounce of something in another time. So it's time is resilient. It snaps back like a rubber band. It's resistant to change. It's like a fast-flowing river. These are the things I've learned through all of this.
Uh-huh.
And so it's pretty hard to mess up the future by going back into the past, which is kind of nice.
Yes.
So now we're talking about beings that, you know, here's these things piling up. Now they have a technology that creates some sort of field that alters physical matter and they can walk through walls.
Okay.
Okay. And then you've got a being that has zero to no emotions. Okay. So, you know, as this list grows and grows and grows, it starts to make sense, you know, at least it's taken me years to realize why they are the way they are and why then they don't quite interact. Now, there's another thing about these beings. I think this is a natural phenomena, is they radiate an energy that makes you miserably uncomfortable, meaning that their presence. Say, for example, you had there's worker beings, which are the little short ones with the big eyes. Those are created. Okay. In my experience, that's what I've seen. They're half robotic and they're half biological. And then what I call the true aliens, you know, I'm not a vocabulary expert here, but what I call the true aliens, which are 4 to 5 feet tall, the ones that create those things, they radiate an energy that you can start picking up maybe when they're 100 or 50 feet away, that's where your heart will start to race, your spine will straighten up. And as they draw closer, all the chemicals in your brain just dumps into your body, and then you have extreme fear, and then you're paralyzed, and when they're right up to you, you'll black out.
Mm-hmm.
That's taken me years to learn how to not black out, you know, and I'm uncomfortable the first few minutes like any other human being would be, and then you get used to it. But the point is, and I used to think, what is that? Well, they're coming from another world. the radiating an energy that's not of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not exactly feels compatible with us.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all this fear, there's all this apprehension, and your adrenaline is flowing,
mm-hmm.
you know, things of that. So pretty much just that in itself makes it kind of difficult for them to knock on your door and say, hi, how are you?
Right, right. Right. Yeah, and that's consistent with reports that I've read or heard about people who have, there was a general or something that was introduced to one, and he was warned by his other commanders, you know, you're going to experience this. You're going to, if you don't look into their eyes right away, once you do, you're going to get weak in the knees and you're going to faint.
Really?
And he said, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. And he looked into the eyes of this being, and it was just overwhelming. The packets of information were just streaming into his head, and he literally, he couldn't stand up, and he ended up, you know, having to be helped up back up off the ground.
Well, you know, that's so true when it comes to, they have to slow way. That's another thing, and it's a good point. It's a good thing you just brought up, because they have to slow way down in transmitting data to you.
Yeah.
From how their normal thinking process is.
Yeah.
Meaning that they're thinking 10 to 100 times faster than we do.
Yeah.
And that's it's another reason why they don't knock on the door and say howdy doody, in a sense. And they don't eat, as far as I know, they don't eat. I'm not sure what keeps them going, but I've never seen them consume food, and I've never seen them take a bathroom break.
Right.
And you know, I don't mean to sound crude, but I mean, in honesty, that's, I just haven't. And so.
Right.
Here you've got a mind that's thinking 100 times faster than yours, and see, what I've learned over the years is they'll anticipate your question before you ask it and answer it. But and I can tell you a little bit about that. There is somewhat of a personality in with some of them. If I've seen any kind of emotion at all, it's cynicism.
Hey, really?
A cynical sense of humor, yeah.
Well, maybe they're us from the future.
Well, I've come to believe that... a considerable percentage of them are.
Okay.
I never could comprehend how time travel could possibly be and how it could work and things of that nature and how can you occupy the same space. But
yeah.
Now that I see that stuff can be done, and, you know, latter in the work that I wrote, I go into some stories where I've had interaction with near future and far future human beings, and we tend to be more like them as we get out a thousand or a couple thousand years or so.
Uh-huh.
But go ahead, sir.
So as far as you know, the human race does continue.
Yeah,
okay.
It does. But what I don't know, and well, there's another thing about their nature, and I really like sharing this part, is they absolutely cannot stand or tolerate questions.
Uh-huh.
They just they completely just do not want questions. And that used to bother me in the early years, but I realize now that, well, it's just so, it's not fair. It's not our fault. You know,
yeah.
If you run into something like this, you're going to have all these questions.
Oh, absolutely.
Where are you from? How'd you get here? What's going to happen to us? Why don't you help us? Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But they're inundated with that endlessly.
Yeah.
So what I've learned over the years is I just keep my mouth shut, and inevitably, when they're ready to tell me something, they do, and then that's how I learn. So, and I haven't been disappointed yet. Sometimes it takes months. Some things I've had in mind have taken years, but inevitably it unfolds, and there's just so much more. And when you were talking about the gentleman, that the general was, the general was preparing for that encounter. I had an experience, and a latter experience here just a couple of years ago where things have really changed. I mean, it was just so horrible the first 6 years. I'll tell you a little bit about that in a minute.
Yeah. It's really fascinating.
But where they actually, I had an encounter where I was told to go to a certain place in the middle of the night. Because I would always scream and cry and yell, how come you guys just can't be more normal and not, you know, walk through my walls and yank me out of the bed or in the living room when I'm just sitting there and do all these procedures? Why don't you just kind of give me an idea that you're coming and so forth? But
yeah, right.
I did have an experience where they showed and hovered over my car And now other people can see this stuff, by the way. I've had plenty of encounters where other people were there and these things have appeared. And I go, oh, God, thank God, thank God, thank God. Because it's that confirmation of other human beings around you.
Oh, yeah.
Seeing
yeah.
these things and experiencing these things. It just that because the the way they operate is isolation, fear, and confusion, and it's sort of a protective mechanism for them to separate you from other people. So the
that
further
like
away
government.
The evidence,
yeah, exactly.
You know, so when other people experience it, anyway, this thing came down, and I was emotional and started screaming things in a sense in my head and verbalized a few things, which was, you know, hey, this planet's in trouble. You told me to get this message out. I don't feel like you're helping me with this, and blah, 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 blah. And then they said, your emotions are getting in the way of us receiving the data properly. We're going to pull it from you. And they did.
Whoa.
And then it was like the gentleman you were referring to, and then likewise put that information to me, and I blacked out from it being too extreme all at one time.
Wow.
But in those beginning years, the first 6 years were I was paralyzed on board, 99% of the time, almost totally. They went through all these ambiguous experiments, semen extraction, emotional experiments, mental experiments. I was forced in those early years to learn a...
an alphabet, yes.
Yeah. And it, for lack of a better term, you know, an alphabet. But,
symbols.
I've gone through various stages of comprehending what it is, and it for sure it in the beginning stages with them it was changing our words, our letters, and our thoughts into symbols. And then I would have to draw out the symbol, think out the symbol, and in some cases mentally verbalize the symbols, and it was a symbol that would represent meanings, and in the meanings, the symbol in your brain, and the way I'm starting to figure this thing, it's in your brain, it would be like a simple symbol that would have a meaning, and then that's easier to pick up from one mind to the other. So you can transmit a symbol, be it technically or exercise your mind, and then you can receive the symbol. So instead of trying to pick up, if you and I were going to be telepathic, instead of trying to pick up every word that you're saying in your mind, and when your brain thinks that energy is like, if you can see it on a graph, it's going all over the place.
Mm.
So it's a way of focusing your mind's energy into a symbol that's easier to pick up, and you pick up a meaning. And where at first they forced me to learn it, but using a punishment and reward system.
Oh yes, I want you to talk about that a little bit, especially about what they gave you as a reward.
Okay. Well, the punishment would be in the early months and early years. If there was a symbol that I was to duplicate or learn, I would resist. The air pressure would go up in the little room I would be in, like a foomp, like this, and it would cause pain in your ears and your head. And then if I would say continue to go no, and I in those early years I did everything possible to resist. Anything I could do to foul up their plans, because I didn't want any of this stuff. Of course,
right.
Who do you talk to?
Right.
Hey, this is going on. I learned really fast, you know, in those early months that, what happened to Jim? Jim's a normal, logical, honest person, and he's lost his mind.
Well,
things have changed over the years because of all the information that's come out.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, man. Anyway.
Thanks to people like you.
Well, thank you. It was traumatic. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and you were kicking and screaming almost all the way.
Yes,
for quite a long time. I mean, I don't want our listeners they're not going to grasp the emotional upheaval that you went through until they read your book and realize that, you know, this was an ongoing nightmare that you were simply not going to have any part of.
Exactly.
So, you know, I think it's important for people to know that, you know. It's easy for you to talk about it now, perhaps, but in reading the book, I mean, I felt as if I was going through all that with you.
And that's really way, the way I really did with all my heart, soul, and spirit. Every word and sentence and paragraph that I put in there was to express what it would be like as if you were that person and what you would do. And
absolutely.
Then, and leave it with what I did, and then, you know, maybe you might have done the same thing or tried something else. But
everything short of getting a gun and trying to shoot them, which you did.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so I didn't want to get sidetracked. What did they give you as a reward for learning the symbols?
Well, reward sessions were something I resisted at first because, again, as you mentioned, I'm glad you brought out, I was resistant to anything they were doing. So even when it was time for a nice little, because I looked at it like, yeah, I know, I'm a laboratory mouse, nice mouse, here's your cheese. You cooperated, here's your cheese, mouse. And so to me, I was offended by it, insulted by it, and I was always angry. But but as time went on, I started enjoying it. Some of the reward sessions would be getting a question answered.
Okay.
Some of the reward sessions would be euphoria.
Oh.
Now, that's something I stayed away from because... they can manipulate the chemicals in your brain and dump them into your body as if you were taking a drug and you feel euphoric.
Wow.
But whenever the euphoria aspects would come in, that was something I would be extremely resistant to because I didn't want to feel that kind of pleasure and laid back. I wanted my head clear as it can be, you know, because I was going to remember everything that's going on. I had to remember, but that was one thing. You could fool around. There were sessions where I could fool around with their thought-activated technology, which they're extremely guarded about, which stands to reason. But and you know, we're not far from that stuff.
Really,
the ability to move objects by thinking about it, the ability to activate something that, for the lack of a better description, a holographic light. The computers are light.
Uh-huh.
And I don't mean lightweight, but it's in thought and it projects out, but it's not quite a hologram, but it is. But others could see it if you want them to, or you can keep it in your mind. And, you know, different gizmos like that. But that 6 years was nothing but torment. And what I learned, which goes to the message of the planet and so forth, over those 6 years was these guys don't take chances. And so they had already worked with world leaders. They already had worked with world powers and have given technology for free energy, have given technology for the clean up the planet and to get rid of the weapons that we have and so on and so forth. And what did we do? We made money with them and made more weapons.
And they're still working with, some of them are still working with the government now, aren't they?
Yeah, because there, you know, there were many experiences where I would see human beings, and it would always be in a military dress. I would even see officers' uniforms, and I would see things that looked like military police, and many individuals with in lab coats and a laboratory setup working with them. That didn't take up a big part of the experiences, but it took up, you know, a good percentages of them. But I don't claim to embrace alien culture. I have an extremely healthy, strong. I keep a strong suspicion and a distance because I, even no matter what's almost whatever said, I don't take its face value in this truth, and I tear it apart and dissect it before I begin to even accept anything. They're extreme. They've been around for thousands of years, if not maybe hundreds.
Okay.
Thousands of years, and have interacted with human beings in secret at different levels throughout that whole thing.
Wow.
But now what I've learned, what that 6 years was about, was in essence to make sure that when I was not paralyzed on board, that I wouldn't go around trying to kill them, and, you know, tear up the ship or something like that.
Right.
And there was one experience that changed everything, which was a mass abduction, and I was able to interact and participate in that scenario.
Tell us more about that, because that's a really fascinating story.
Sure. bearing in mind, again, I was always in one room for 6 years going through all these tormenting experiments and procedures. And what led up to that experience was the fact that I had an opportunity to kill one, and I didn't, as you were mentioning earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So that was almost like the final test before I was allowed to be free. But I had gotten pulled, and when I had... should I go into the pretty much the details of the with the planet situation? And
yes,
the,
yes, I think that's really important for people to hear that.
Okay, I had gotten pulled, but what was it wasn't that unusual for me to find myself in underground facilities where there were military individuals. There were times I was pulled that I was in what appeared to be hangars. And I was always convinced I was in Nevada, and you know, I wasn't an area 51 enthusiast or studier, not even knowing that that stuff was going on over there.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that I because I would see the mountains and the way the terrain was, and from going to Las Vegas when I used to visit, it was identical,
huh.
Same sort of desert terrain. So it could have been a state, you know, south or north of it, but I always thought it was Nevada. Funny, now I live in Las Vegas, isn't it?
Yeah, very.
Yeah, I mean, I gravitated to the state, and I may have a lot to do with it. Anyway, so I was pulled at times on board, but I was in this particular scenario. I found myself in a clearing in the woods, and I was standing up, and when I became conscious after the transport, because you black out when you're transported the hard way, which means that you're pulled when a craft is in flight. And when I came to, I was standing, and I could move. I had mobility. And that was extremely unusual. And below me were people dispute all over the ground in their night clothes or nude, where you could tell that they were pulled and kind of just dropped, in a sense, on the ground. They were either blacked out or barely moving or moaning, and there was a girl that was sitting up in the fetal position, rocking back and forth, scared to death, and there was another guy who was standing, but he was mostly paralyzed, but he could talk, and he just kept saying, I was in my car.
Wow.
And so there was about a dozen to 15 people piled, you know, by my feet, and to my left was... another 12 or 15 people in a pile, so to speak. I hate to use the term, but lack of a better description anyway. And then there was a third set of people piled up, laying around like that.
Huh.
There was one gray per group standing there, like waiting on something. And the girl was, I don't know why she wasn't totally paralyzed, and most of them were. But she was rocking back and forth, and she was about to go into, like, maybe shock.
Uh-huh.
And so I got this telepathic message to calm her. And, wow, I was like, okay, I can move.
Yeah.
I don't want to mess up.
Yeah.
And now they're telling me to do something, you know. And so, wow, 6 years of just being frozen. And so... I went up to her, and I touched her. I put my hand, as I recall, on her shoulder, and I said, hey, look, you're going to be okay. These things pass. They're going to take you on board. They're going to teach you this alphabet. And then, no, you're telling her too much. It was a telepathic calm her. Okay, and then I did. And then there was the other guy that was standing up. He was complaining, so I was calming him. And then... to our horizon, to the left, three balls of light that, by the way, it was an overcast night, and
okay.
There were three balls of light to the horizon, way to the left, that looked like, and I always describe it this way, those million candle lights when they're trying to advertise cars or a new shopping center or something.
Oh, yeah.
It just looked like they were sitting there like that, and one of them came across the sky and hovered above the clouds over my group, and then another one went and that fast and hung over the second group. And another, what looked like this light, over the third group of people. And then the one that was over me started descending and then broke through the clouds, and it was just one of the most gorgeous sights that I had ever seen. And it was the first time that I was looking at the exterior of one of these things instead of being trapped in a room. It was like egg shaped on the bottom, and I always say the same thing about it. One of the first things I noted was the fact that it didn't look that aerodynamic to me. I thought these things would look sleek and mean and
that's what I would think.
Stealthy, you know, but it didn't, and it was an odd shaped or unequal shape. I don't know if that was the drive, whatever that the egg shaped thing was on the bottom, and there were windows around it, and I can see the scurrying of activity looking out the window, running to the back, looking out the window as they were hovering over us, and then this extreme bright light came out, beamed out from it with a hue of blue, and it was beautiful, and I was looking at it, and I went, it's beautiful, it's beautiful. Yeah. I started drawing close to it, and I was waving my hands up in the air like to stretch as if I wanted to touch it.
Uh-huh.
And then the one to my left, to the other one, it descended through the clouds, and then the third one did. And then I just went, they're all beautiful.
Wow.
I didn't know what to do, but I was staying calm. I was behaving, but I was excited over the fact that this, the whole thing was like, wow, I mean, what an extreme. From here, this torture, as I thought, trauma, being paralyzed, being cooped up in this room with nasty air most of the time, by the way. The way they do the air is it would stay really, started getting warm and humid and just nasty for like an hour, and then there would be like 2 minutes of like fresh air would come in. So that's how they did the air.
Okay.
So about every hour you would get a swoop of fresh, cool air. But anyway,
how big do you think that those three ships were?
That's the good question, because it leads to the from what I could see, maybe they were. I'm not an expert at the size. Maybe 50 feet or 100 feet.
Okay.
But they were. The amazing thing was what they looked at like from the outside, and once we were in the interior, was a whole different world.
Yeah. Kind of like Doctor Who's TARDIS,
which is
it's a spaceship that's it's the size of a English police box, and when he walks in there, it's a kind of a English mystery, science fiction mystery.
Oh, cool!
And when he walks into it, it's the size of several football fields.
Well, there you go, because when I blacked out, and then I found myself in a corridor with the people that I was with. On the ground, and they were standing up, but they were like zombie-like. If I took a step forward, the whole group followed me.
Wow.
And I was told, there was my second message was, lead them.
Okay.
And the thought that came to my mind was, what am I leading them to, slaughter? You know, what do you mean lead them, you know? But I saw that this corridor opened up to this huge, and you just brought up something neat. I would say at least the size of a basketball stadium.
Yeah.
Not even relevant to what I saw from the outside. See, this thing with the dimensions and the ability to be small and big and relative is that's again, they're light years ahead
in
those areas where it's technology. I've always stuck with the fact that try to stay logical, Jim. Try and stay as scientific as you can when you see all this stuff and categorize it. Don't go too far to the left, don't go too far to the right, and really just try in your mind to get a frame of reference. And I anchored into logic and science as a frame of reference for me to not go crazy.
And
I've held on to that anchor, and I've held anchor there, and then things are slowly starting to fall into place. So there is something with you could be shrunk down and you could be expanded, and it's a reality. It's a science reality. It can be done. And when you're working with energies and breaking down atoms and vibrations and things of that nature, it's not that difficult, but you know, I don't think we're there yet. But nonetheless, we were led into, I led them into this huge room the size of a gymnasium that were nothing but rows and rows and rows and rows of monitors.
Okay.
Like little desks with monitors is the best way I could describe it. And then my next instructions were, or command, so to speak. Now, I call this, I've got a job, okay?
Okay.
So you got to understand, I after 6 years of all that hell, so to speak, to be able to just move around and feel free, and I didn't want to mess up, and it was all exhilarating. And so I didn't question any of the things, and what I was seeing, I didn't sense any danger. But at the end of the room, there was a scurry of activity mixed with ETs and humans. And so I started leading the guy that was standing on the ground that I had mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
towards all the way back as far as I could to seat him on in front of his monitor-looking thing. And as I started working my way back, curiosity got a hold of me, and I started studying the room I was in to see what was going on. I was looking closer at the machines that were next to me. I was looking towards the back, and then the telepathic words and very strong, strong telepathic words were, no, you know, like a one-word command for a dog, you know.
Yeah.
And I resisted, and then it was no, no, like don't do that, come back and get the people. Well, that's where I started not following the orders, and then boom, I blacked out.
Bad dog.
Yeah. When I came to, I was in front of a monitor, and everybody was seated already. So,
okay.
So somebody had to do that, and it wasn't me. At least I don't have any memory of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And what started coming on, the screens lit up, and they all lit up in this huge room at the same time. And it was phenomenal. It was like, I describe it this way every time, it's like going to a super TV center, and they've got all these television sets with the glass plate windows all tuned to the same channel and brilliant color.
Yeah.
And so you could see the glow and ebb of the light, flow and ebb of the light that was going in sequence with all of these monitors. And one of the first scenes that pop up on this monitor and was just you were overwhelmed with motion and the color and they had done something with where each person was, in a sense, hooked up to each machine, where you become emotionally just overwhelmed with beauty and awe and a sense of euphoria. So, again, they can mess with the chemicals in your brain.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful earth scene. I mean, it was beautiful, beautiful blue water to see. It just took your breath away. And it was teeming with fish. And the sky was clear. And you're just sitting there going, wow. And then that scene disappeared. And you would hear a hum, and then the screen was black for like 3 seconds, and then you'd hear hum, and then another scene, and it would be mountains with snow on them and a crystal blue sky, and just one scene after the other, and it just, even though these things are normally beautiful, the way they had set us up was, and these are all these people in this huge gymnasium thing, and these rows and rows of monitors. And it was one beautiful earth scene after the other. It was mountains in one, and it was beautiful trees in another, and it was a forest, and it was the rainforest, and all of this. And and then you just went, wow, wow, beautiful, it's beautiful, it's beautiful. And then the scenes slowly started getting nasty and ugly. And then you started feeling just the reverse emotion, like a total extreme of, oh, God, that's awful. First you would see that with the beautiful scene of the sea with the teeming with fish, and then the water was gray and nasty looking, and the fish were bloated and floating. And the next scene would be the mountain scene that you had just seen, and the trees were all like acid rain burnt on the top and gray background for the sky. And then on each scene, as the other one was, it was like 3 seconds, and you just, no, I don't want to see this. I don't want to see this. And the telepathic message came across, you're killing your planet. Your planet is dying. At each scene, you're killing your planet. Your planet is dying. On each scene, you're killing your planet. Your planet is dying. And for me personally, and I'm sure for everybody that was part of that, because, you know, I've heard now that a lot of abductees will say they get environmental lessons, don't they?
Uh-huh.
I think you've heard that too, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't want to see that. And I've always been different, I think, from most people that are pulled, because I retain, you know, clear conscious memories face-to-face. They're not taken from me, at least that I'm aware of, okay?
Right.
I'm from point A in experience to point B at the end of it. There's times that I have blacked out intermittently, at least the way my perception of it, but most of the time I'm there conscious. And I didn't want to see these nasty scenes. So I started looking, just on a personal note with all of this, like a kid, I started looking to the bottom. On the bottom left, I saw symbols for each scene. gone across. And they were symbols I recognized from the stuff that I had learned.
Oh.
And I realized it was a filing system. So it was my way of getting my mind and eyes off of these this monitor that I was in front of. And then this, in block letters, N-O, came across this screen. No.
They knew that you were doing that.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Don't look at that. Right.
Wow.
No. And then I kept looking. Of course, I still have that in me to resist.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
And as each scene kept changing, I kept trying to figure out the filing system. And then it was no, and then no, and no a lot. And then you could hear it in your head telepathically, and I blacked out.
Yeah. They wanted you to see they wanted you to feel the impact of the pictures, it seems like.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The assignment on cutting through a lot of the chase is the rainforest. Stop the burning and the destruction of the rainforest. So others may have gotten the ocean, the sea. Others may have gotten the atmosphere.
Oh.
You know, mine was the rainforest. And,
wow.
And I do have some thoughts in mind that are not totally of my own, mostly not of my own, on how to resolve some of the problems out there.
In case people don't know, it is a travesty that the rainforests are being just cut down systematically. They're being destroyed, and crops of, I think it's soybeans, are being planted, and they're only good for 1 year. You can only grow them for 1 year, and then you can't plant them there again.
And then they go and cut and burn some more, right?
Yes. It's really terrifying. I mean, anybody that starts to look into this global warming thing is going to have to confront the unpleasantness of what we're doing to ourselves.
Well, we can stop it. There's still time.
Mm-hmm.
We can reverse most of it, but we're past the point of no return to reverse all of it,
mm-hmm.
and to where it was. But we still have time to make it okay. And as each, you know, as the common sense tells you, as it goes on, it's going to get harder. And the way it was... I didn't mean to get so loud on that. I hope I didn't break
your... Oh,
you're
fine.
I said way, and it kind of yelled out.
It's okay. You're
my arm slipped off my knee here. Well, anyway, the way it was described to me was to look at the planet like a human torso.
Uh-huh.
And what we've done is severed the arms and legs of the planet.
Yeah.
And, you know, a torso can still live, right?
Yeah.
With no arms and legs,
yeah.
Right? And then, but however, the vital organs are being attacked now. And we've attacked the Earth's ability to cleanse and recycle herself.
Absolutely.
And with that in mind, I'll give one type of solution would be, and this, again, this is not coming from me, and it's a global thing, and it sounds so simple what I'm about to say. And some of the things I'm told are so simple, you just go, oh, come on, man, that's corny. It can't be that easy. And then when you think about what they say or tell you over a few days or a few weeks or even a month, you go, well, that's the only thing that makes sense. Buy the land globally. Buy the land. Buy what's left. See, those people there would be resistant to have anybody stop them, because they're going to turn around and say, hey, you know, you had your heyday.
Uh-huh.
You had your heyday economically. You destroyed your own environment. Now you're going to come here and meddle in our affairs. You could see why they would be in Central and South America and in the equator countries. They'd be resistant to us or for any of the other free countries to stop them.
Uh-huh.
Because they're going to turn around and say, oh, sure, you did it for 200 years. Now we got our chance to develop, but you're going to try and stop us.
Mm.
So one step would be to buy it all, and you buy it with more than what the fair market would bear.
Okay.
If you double or even triple it, you buy it. The Native Indians that are indigenous, thank you,
yeah,
to the area get to stay. They're the ones that can,
yes,
be the keepers. Gee, guess what the name of the book is?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Okay, but that's just kind of a tie-in with that, but that's not
okay.
The reason the,
yes,
book's called that, okay? But they would be the keepers of it, and now you've got all these other people who need to thrash and cut and burn the rainforest, they have to be taken care of.
Right.
You have to build an economy around it. Now, here we are in America, and we've got our military power, and we've got all this strength, and we've got all this money, and we've got all this technology, and we've got a lot of might and a lot of policing power. What could be better than making the rainforest around the globe a matter of national security, a direct threat to the security of the United States if anything were to try to invade that land? What does that mean? That means that now you can put, instead of the military, so to speak, focusing on other areas, use, you could keep it in tune. You could keep it going. You could keep it honed. But its job, a big part of its job, and other countries around the world, would be, in a sense, to police these areas. Now, I'm not talking about violently. And so now there's a way to keep our military strong and keep it somewhere that's vital. And now if we're doing that and America does the right thing and we're doing things like that, this is a simple message from these guys, you know, and it's like, okay, this is so ABC, you guys.
Well, I really like that message, but don't we have a group of elite globalists that have other ideas about how things are going to turn out? They already own most of the earth.
They're greedy, right? This is what I was told.
What's that?
Hey, you know what? On your show, sir, I have not gone into this detail, and I have not written about this. So this is a first for your listeners and yourself.
All right.
I talk about these things, and I think it's time that I do now because
I agree.
I've really been resistant to go to this point. I knew what I've learned about these guys, and when I say these guys, Gray's, ETs. Is that everything? They're a numerologist. Everything is orderly, and there's a right time and a right place for things. And now I'm feeling pretty comfortable. When I feel this comfort, then I know it's time to share, you know, this knowledge. Greed.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So what satisfies the greedy? Overwhelm them with what they think they want and more.
Huh.
Because it's worth it. There's a way to do it, and you buy it, and you literally buy it. So I don't want to give away too much of the business strategy here, but I'll touch on the surface of it because I know inevitably it's going to go this course because there's not just – I wasn't the only one in those mass abductions that got messages. It's just that some people have limited memories. Some people have fragmented memories, you know, and for myself, I'm considered to be the average person. And that's it, average intelligence, and nothing special, nothing stupid, but who got to retain it all. So I thought I was cursed all these years, and now I realize it's a privilege.
You're in a unique position.
Mm-hmm. And it's the greed factor. So what you do is you offer more than what they could ever expect, and with dividends, because it's going to have to be an incentive program. Okay, why does a dictatorship not necessarily work? It's because there's a difference between wanting to do something or being forced to do something.
Right.
And incentives would be for those who own that stuff to have the desire, even if it's greed, whatever motivates them, whatever their hot buttons are, you satisfy it because there's plenty of resources on this planet to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that vital. It's that vital.
Jim, there's something that disturbs me in your book, and I haven't been able to get it out of your mind, and I just want to briefly touch on it. In one situation when you were pulled, I believe that you described that you saw a room full of, you walked through a room full of babies that had blonde hair and blue eyes.
Oh, those.
And, you know, I don't know if you made the connection or not, but it made me wonder if there was some kind of connection between that kind of genetic alteration and the what went on in Hitler's Germany.
Well, there are, throughout the years, I've seen too many, when they use dimensions to travel. And in these dimensions, I've seen things, and I've seen them briefly, because you're passing through dimensions to get from. There's a couple of ways to travel. One is through the dimensions, as I'm mentioning now. And so you see things that exist in these dimensions briefly, and then you pass through another one, and you see something there.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, I have seen what I thought was unfortunate, but I'm realizing something. Different periods of people from different periods of time, and unfortunately, some of them look like they were of the German or the Nazi era people. And I look and I go, oh my God, you know, like that. And now I'm in another dimension, and I look and see something. I go, I can't believe my eyes. And then like that.
Yeah.
But what I've learned is, once you cross that line, or once you unveil another dimension, and you're there. There's an agreement. It's like whatever it is you are, you're there, and they don't fight amongst themselves.
Uh-huh.
And I don't really see them crossing the line here to meddle with our affairs, except for you're always going to have individuals who want. I think they were the good ones that tried to get rid of Hitler. I think that in that day they did have secret technologies. I think they did get it forcibly.
Uh-huh.
From ETs. I don't think it was just given to them, because that's why I don't think they've really gone. Now, the things that I've seen in the room, so I have seen innuendos of that, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
And it's something that, again, now I'm sharing something, again, this is breaking ground with you and your show.
Uh-huh.
I'm very comfortable with it.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yeah, I really am. And you're that way, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
It's much easier for me to open up with this. But I've been very guarded about some of the things I've seen until I can draw a conclusion and form an opinion, and, of course, you can have your own.
Right.
But what I'm seeing is, once you're in that world and you have that technology, it's a non-meddling thing between themselves and here. So if you can manage to cross that line, however you do it, and once you're there, you don't die. And that's another thing that now I'm going from one thing to the other, that they have an advantage over us. Not that they just think 10 to 100 times faster and they have all this technology, but from the best I can tell, they don't die. They can be killed.
Wow.
But I know they go on hundreds, if not thousands of years, and just think all the how much smarter and wiser you'll be.
Well, but I don't know how much smarter or wiser I would be in 1,000 years.
Well, you know, when I ask people that, I go, well, you know, if you could, and most of all, I'm surprised by hearing people saying, I wouldn't want to live that long.
Yeah.
But how about if you had the option?
If my awareness and consciousness and ability to express compassion and love increased with that time, I would say that's a good thing.
Amen.
Jim, you aware of any of the human ET hybrid programs that are going on?
Yeah, I was about to go into
that. Oh, good.
Yeah, because that's really what that was, I think. No, I shouldn't say that. Because you brought up that room with those beings on the table.
Yeah.
I had an experience where it was like phenomenal. I kicked one. I really messed up on that experience, but and then they ignored me for months. But I didn't mean to kick them. I was on a gurney and I kicked one when they were extracting semen. Because now that I was able to move around, instead of being paralyzed, I was like, you know, gritting my teeth in a sense, without going into the long story of how that went. And I reacted with a knee jerk and kicked the one that was doing his business. Semen extraction is common.
I have to ask you this question, because the listeners are going to want to know. Is the semen extraction process pleasurable, or is it just like a procedure?
It depends on your mind. See, I've learned to shake off the screen imaging. Do you know what I mean by that?
Tell our listener, I do, because from reading your book, but tell them what you mean by that.
They can transmit a scenario in your mind, and then you think you're seeing something pleasurable.
Exactly.
Like a beautiful.
Exactly.
Somebody that your wildest dreams sexually or something like that. So you think you're with somebody.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
a machine just extracting the semen.
Yeah.
But, again, remember I said that, whenever a reward session might be a sense of euphoria.
Yeah.
And I would fight that off because I want reality.
Yes.
Yeah. Same thing with that. I've learned how to shake off the screen imaging. And they are. They're like chameleons. That's why they can blend into the scenery and you think you're seeing a plane. And then, or a jet, and that's what your mind says you see,
or a bird,
exactly. And then sometimes the technology messes up, and oh, poof, it's a ship. Okay, and because they're not perfect, they're technically up there in high percentages of not making mistakes, but still it's not perfect. But back to that, you would think that you're maybe with your wife, or you're with your spouse, or you're with somebody you've always dreamt about being with, or things of that, and it's pleasurable, but when in fact it's nothing like that at all. They have, you know, I don't mean to get so graphic. I don't want to get too graphic with this part of it.
Okay, well,
but I can. I mean,
it's up to you.
Yeah, well, they use instruments that they'll touch your testicles with it. I'm talking about from a man's perspective.
Okay,
that's something that looks like a wand, and as soon as it touches your testicles, you feel like a little electrical stimuli, and then you immediately ejaculate, and they extract the specimen. But in the process, they're transmitting these thoughts in your mind as if you're with somebody.
Oh, wow.
Now, what I saw in that room, there was an experience where now I get pulled, and I'm standing up in the room that for 6 years I had been sat down on this thing that was like a bench parallel.
Uh-huh.
I was standing up, and I was leaning up against this table screen, and I was by myself in there. And I'm in the room, and I can move. And I'm going, my God, man, things have really changed here.
Uh-huh.
I'm in this room, and I could see the bench that I've been on for 6 years hundreds of times. I could see the table screen that I was always sat before. I could see the screen on the wall, and I'm by myself, and I'm leaning against this table. And I'm thinking, what do they want me to do?
Uh-huh.
I can move, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so I'm touching the table. I see my legs can move. This is what's going to lead to that.
Okay.
And at the end of the one end of the room, I can see like a hallway or a corridor. So I said, well, maybe they want me to walk around. Let me just start heading towards it real slow. And if they stop me or paralyze me, I guess I know that I'm not supposed to do that.
Right.
And so I made my way to the end of the room. Light emits from nowhere, but yet everywhere. things just seem to glow in there. And I came to the corridor to the opening in the room. It was like a door opening without a door.
Uh-huh.
And I looked to the left, and I could just see a narrow hallway. And I was standing there, and I was looking in the room, and I was looking in the hallway. And I just took a deep breath, and I said, okay, let's go. So I started walking down the hallway, and then to my right I saw another opening, and I looked into this room, and that's where you were referring to. There were rows and rows and rows of gurneys, and there were these beings laying on them on their back that had something like a sheet over them, and they were just staring into the ceiling as if they were dead. And it just scared me to no end. What they were showing me was hybrid beings that they're making for an insurance policy. For this, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that was a weird beep. To get as close to the this human species as possible, insurance policy in case we destroy ourselves. Because I said that the human race makes it, but how it makes it and the types that come back aren't exactly what we are that I'm seeing.
Oh.
And I think at that point in time, because now we're talking 14, 15 years ago, I don't think they quite had it down. But anyway, these things were laying there, and they scared me, and I just started panicking. I'm going, oh, my God, they're dead, they're dead, they're dead, they're dead. I was just screaming it into the room and into the hallway, and then a supervisor being came from behind me and transmitted something into my mind, which was a screen image, which very powerfully so that I couldn't shake off, which was all of a sudden these beings that were laying there started looking like what you were talking about, like women with blind, well, you said babies, but they were more like they were bigger than babies.
Oh, okay.
But they had blonde hair and red lipstick. And they all started looking the same, like people now, okay?
Uh-huh.
And they go, we're not dead. And then I blacked out.
Oh, my.
Yeah,
that was a real spooky part.
Yeah, they were showing
me. I got chills when I read that.
They were showing me their handiwork, you know? They were letting me walk for, you know, the first time. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
One of the first times. And then to see what they're up to. And And so it was actually an extreme privilege. It sounds like the Helsinki syndrome when you think your couches are great people, but you know, what are you going to do? And that's when I found myself on that gurney, and then there was a semen extraction time, and again I wasn't paralyzed. So these are all different things, and I kicked one. At the end of the procedure, the one in the middle that was taking it, they were transmitting thoughts of just being pleasurable, and I was going, no, this is not pleasurable, and I pushed forward with my foot, and I hit one in between the stomach and the chest, and then he went going backwards, and then when he got his balance, he came up, and I'm laying on this gurney, and I was scared to death. I went, oh, my God, what are they going to do to me now? Because I just did. Finally, I'm not paralyzed, and I'm kicking these guys.
Yeah.
And so he lurched forward really fast, and his face was within an inch and a half of my face, right up to my eyes.
Wow.
And he transmitted 100 thoughts in a nanosecond.
Wow.
And with the emotion. So if I slowed him down, it would be in slow motion.
Uh-huh.
Why did you kick me? You shouldn't kick me. You know better than to kick me.
Huh.
Why would you want to kick me? Why would you want to mess things up? All these forms, zoop, that fast.
Wow.
And with the feelings of it, and my eyes were just wide open, and at the end of that nanosecond, I just went, ugh, and blacked out.
Wow. Jim, you know, I could probably spend hours talking to you on the air, and we're going to be out of time in just a moment.
Okay.
I want you to have a chance to kind of wrap it up with what you think, you know, what would you like the audience to hear? And I also want you to let people know where they can find your book or get a hold of you and any, you know, parting thoughts you might have.
Well, as far as the book and getting a hold of it, it would be at Amazon.com.
Okay.
Everybody knows that. However, there are several books called The Keepers, I've learned. So you got to go with the author, Jim Sparks.
Okay.
And then The Keepers. Also, something I was kind of resisting to doing is like being too commercial or trying to be commercial with this thing.
I understand.
But I'm learning that over time, it's just there's some things that are necessary. And here I'm at. You know, in the last 19 years, I've wanted to educate the public with all my heart, soul, and spirit. But to make a long story short, I am building a website, and that'll be coming up. And I can't throw the name of it yet until it's up and ready. And that'll be another way to get a book too.
Well, I tell you what, Jim, I want to thank you for this amazing interview, and I'd like to know if you'd be willing to come back again in the near future, and we can continue this conversation.
That would be fantastic.
Wonderful.
I feel so at home and so relaxed and so open to share, not what's coming from me, but what's coming from them. And you've made it so, and it would be a great thing to come back.
Thanks a million, Jim. And that was Jim Sparks. His book is called The Keepers.
Yes, sir.
And this is the end of A Fireside Chat for now. Until later, this is Lance White with Jim Sparks, and we will be back soon. Thanks again, Jim. Bye-bye.
Bye.